No Regrets. Cafe Conversations with Madeline Smith in conversation with Bill Lawrence. Episode 5.
And in this episode, Maddie takes another deep dive with me into her life, talking about being on location, on landlords and leading men, on working with animals and in bad weather, on location catering, working with extras and stand-ins, and on working at the old BBC Television Centre. Hello, Maddie, and welcome once more to the cafe for another deep dive conversation into your life and career. And for this episode, what I'd like to do is to have a look at that whole world away from the TV and film studios. Tell me what it's like to be on location.
There's an old saying, an old saw, which is that it's all right as long as it's on location. Ooh, ouch. Well, all the implications there. That's an old joke. So actors can sometimes get quite desperate. And this is, I'm going to wind theatre and television and film into this, Bill. I'm going to talk about what it's like, basically, to be away from home. Now, a lot of actors love being on tour with, we'll talk theatre, first of all. They love it. I personally don't care for it, but I've done a heck of a lot of it. And you can get to play some really super roles by allowing yourself to be away from home. And you can have some extraordinary experiences. For example, when I was on tour for the play Shut Your Eyes and Think of England, all of us actors were dumped into the one dreadful hole. I can't remember. I think it might have been somewhere outside Birmingham. And I went quite innocently to run my bath on the corridor, and I found that the pipe-smoking landlord was actually in the bathroom with me and in asking if he could run the bath for me, and I declined. I think he had intentions, but I pretended I didn't understand, so that was that one. Meantime, I believe I have it on good authority that his wife was actually meantime in bed with one of the actors. But anyway, we'll leave that one on one side. So lots of jinxes go on, or high jinxes go on when you are on tour. Either they do or they don't. You can have a perfectly innocent tour or not quite so innocent. It can be great fun or very, very boring. Let me go through one or two of them. I think my favourite theatrical tours have been for the Cambridge Theatre Company. I'm not even sure if that's still in existence or whether that's been disbanded. But years ago, there was a wonderful company called the Cambridge Theatre Company. And in 1976, I did a double bill of The Rivals, and which was Sheridan, I think, isn't it? A Noel Coward one, Present Laughter. And that was the most enormous fun. I really, really adored it. There were affairs going on, yes. And in fact, that one in particular actually resulted in a marriage, which is rather lovely. The leading man made up to me, first of all, because he was looking for some fun. And then when that was refused, he then moved on. And that particular lady didn't spurn him. And they ended up having an extremely happy marriage until he died, which is lovely, actually. So do I like it? Yes, up to a point. If I get to play a really good part, then I do enjoy it. And that particular tour was wonderful because there was an actor called Mark Wing Davey, who was then married to, still is married to a lovely actress called Anita Carey. And we were directed by the wonderful actor/director Robert Lang. And I played a fantastic, a couple of fantastic parts that normally I would not be cast in, and that was wonderful. And we literally travelled around the country, and I had just learnt to drive. And I, my very first outing with the car, I had my understudy with me, a little girl called Gillian, and I hadn't got a clue what I was doing. We were driving at dead of night, it was pitch black, and I got to some roundabout somewhere, and not having a clue what to do on roundabouts, because I'd never learnt on roundabouts. I'd learnt in London, central London, where there are no roundabouts, I can inform everybody quite safely. And the driving school was actually in King's Cross, and wherever we went, there were no roundabouts. There were lots of hills on the way to Hampstead every time, but no roundabouts. So with little Gillian, my very first roundabout, I drove straight across it. And I was stopped by some extremely handsome policemen who said, "Excuse me, if I could just stop you there." "Yes." And he said, "Have you got a license to drive?" And I said, "Yes, of course I have got a license to drive." He said, "Well, you went straight across the roundabout as though it wasn't there." And I realised what I'd done, and I promised that I would have some lessons on roundabouts, which I did. So that was an interesting experience. And through touring, I think I became a halfway decent driver from literally driving around the countryside. And so that was an extremely happy event. We did Aberystwyth and Warwick and Cambridge for about 6 weeks, which was wonderful. It was a really superb baptism of fire, that one was. And then much, much later, I did another tour for the Cambridge Theatre Company, the wonderful play called Canaries Sometimes Sing. I'm going to have to try and think of the playwright. Very similar to Noel Coward. Bill, I'm going to appeal to you, actually, on this one. Do you know it?
Yes, Maddie. Canaries Sometimes Sing is by Frederick Lonsdale.
Very similar to Noel Coward. Wonderful. 30s. Lovely 30s piece. Just a four-hander. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful play. And I absolutely adored it. The only problem was the leading man. Now, the leading man decided to combine his life with music and Radio 3, because he was recording or making a lot of programs for Radio 3, something of a musicologist, very, very talented man, but also very tired by the time we came to do the show. And as my scenes were all with him, a lot of plot laying, and there was one night in particular where I'm speaking to him and he had fallen fast asleep. So he's on the sofa looking at me, supposedly listening interestedly, and he's fast asleep. That was quite awkward. So you do have some larks and fun when you're on tour, because a lot of actors try to combine, you know, the tour with day work as well, which is what he did. So he was kind of commuting to London, recording his programmes for Radio 3, and then coming back and doing the show at night. So great fun, and I do enjoy it. I do like touring. And then another one when I'd got my daughter, and I was a tiny little girl, and she was a baby of about a year, and I was taking her with me, and that was a tour of an Alan Ayckbourn play. And I remember Bill Fraser being disgusted with me and saying, "What about that poor little baby? You've left her all on her own in the dressing room. You shouldn't do that." Oh dear, and I felt very guilty. But I had a lot of fun. Dear Bill Fraser. My husband was Andrew Ray in the play. Now, Andrew Ray was Ted Ray's son. And remember, there was Robin Ray and Andrew Ray, both the sons of the wonderful Ted Ray. Well, Andrew had red hair, and I'm not going to be rude about him because he was very pleasant, but he was also a little bit peculiar. So we were doing a season's greetings where I'm supposedly pregnant and he is my husband. And then one night he didn't appear. And I've learned since from the guy, Roger, who was company manager, that in fact what happened, the reason he didn't appear, was that he was drunk. He'd gone into the bar in the theatre, helped himself to everything in sight, and was throwing peanuts into the audience. So I only know now what actually happened. They removed Andrew, who never came back again. And from there on, I did all my scenes with the understudy. So that was good fun. And I didn't, as I say, I didn't know until about 6 months ago what had actually happened and why I suddenly had a different husband. But anyway, that was great fun. And Andrew was removed. I don't actually know what happened to Andrew Ray after that, but I think there may have also been some affairs going on. There was all sorts of things. I'm not sure about dear Marty Kane, whether she was having affairs or whether with him or quite what. But there was a lot of carrying on. There are a lot of affairs on tour. You have to be prepared for that.
One of the things I've always wondered is when you go on location with a television programme, what is that like? Is it always a wonderfully comfortable experience, or can it be quite a difficult and challenging experience?
Right, well, I've been on location for All Creatures Great and Small. Years ago, I played a goat lady in a Christmas special. Wonderful fun, lovely cast. In fact, that's the second time that I did All Creatures Great and Small. I had dogs the first time and recorded it in Birmingham in a studio, and that was all very nice. I think a little bit in the marketplace as well. But that was all very sedate, and I think I went home to my own bed. Well, on this particular occasion, All Creatures Great and Small, I was put up in, I can't remember now, it was either Beverley or Richmond in Yorkshire, but anyway. Was put in a very, very noisy hotel. So I moved and I went to a place called Simonstone in my little mini car. It was very noisy, rather a noisy, very friendly, but rather noisy crew, and I couldn't sleep. And I got my rich desserts because there was a barn owl who actually came onto my windowsill and peered in and kept me awake. So that served me right, didn't it? And then anyway, so the next day, or the same day as the barn owl, I was filming, and the weather was so dire in May in Yorkshire, in this beautiful town where we were filming my carryings on, if you like, with my goats. The weather was so dreadful that they confessed to me that I was the only actor left up there, that they'd sent everybody else home. So would I mind very much if I literally talked to myself? So I did my entire scene with a camera going along nicely on a dolly, and I talking to myself, or pretending to talk to the other actors, but in fact talking to me. And that was quite challenging, to say the least. So it can be great fun on tour, very challenging, and you have to expect the unexpected. Now, I've done a lot of location with films, and that can be great fun. For example, The Vampire Lovers, where I had to ride side saddle, and dear George Cole had to ride a horse. We were riding through some thicket or something somewhere on location, and I think he fell. He was absolutely terrified of horses, and of course I was as safe as houses on my side saddle, so that was quite interesting too. You can expect to freeze half to death on location in films. And the question of whether I like it or not is interesting. The answer to that is probably no, because I'm always absolutely frozen. And I remember Trevor Howard buying me brandy in the pub. Lovely, lovely Trevor Howard. And also me sitting in a caravan with an oil fire which stank. Because in those days you did not have a trailer to yourself. And dear Nicky Henson and a load of lovely extras playing poker and the floor bouncing up and down. And then also, of course, a similar experience when I filmed the two Ronnies. I was so tired. It was just me being filmed at that time. I was so tired in 1971. 2 weeks of filming in a park outside Bath for the two Ronnies. And I was so tired and so cold that the makeup lady couldn't actually stick the eyelashes on me because my eyes were running and streaming with the cold and the tiredness. So that there's that. It's not romantic. I have to tell anybody that thinks that filming is romantic, it ain't. It is cold, it is wet, it is uncomfortable, It is tiring. And also, I remember filming with Eric Morecambe, and that dear, dear man, we filmed a little film called The Passionate Pilgrim with him. And that dear, dear man, in the pouring, pelting rain, still going through his jokes, still being funny, and still being utterly, utterly adorable. So you just gotta, I think it's probably one of the hardest professions there are. And the awful thing is that you've got to look as though you're enjoying it massively, even when you're not.
So here's some things that I've always wanted to know as well, and you might be able to help me with these, Maddie. The first one is, when you're on location, and something that would be dear to my heart, what is the food like, and where do you get the food from?
It's very stodgy. It comes off of a wagon, and they are special catering companies, and I think now it's a lot more professional. But in my day, the wagon comes out first thing, and the first people there are the extras. They are stuffing their faces. In fact, I think one of the main reasons they do the job is in order that they can be fed morning, noon and night. And it's mostly stodge. It's all bread, 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 bread. Bacon butties, bacon butties, bacon butties, egg butties, bacon and egg butties, full stop. And then a lovely stodgy lunch, and then coffee and tea. It's filling, and it's frequent, and it's always there. So when you're hungry, you just run to the, you know, they lay it all out for you, and it's there, as I say, it's there all day long. And there are special catering companies, so you do not go hungry, and most actors gain stones in weight.
So there's something I was going to talk about. You've mentioned there, so we can connect. The extras. So what is the relationship between extras for a television production and the actors? Is there a relationship? Are they kept separate? Do you mingle together? Do you get to know extras over the course of filming? Or what's that like?
Right. Well, there's two classes of extras. There's your own special stand-in, who is usually an extra that's been promoted, and that is somebody that you are well advised to be friendly with. That is the person that goes and fetches cups of tea for you, that stands and does your lighting for you, so that you, poor little darling, can go and rest or have a sleep or get made up or get your frock on. That poor treasure does all your hard work for you until the moment, you know. So she, in my case, obviously, is she, gets lit, does all the tasks. And I had really, I think, two or maybe three stand-ins in the whole of my career. The idea is that they are usually of a similar height, similar hair colour to yourself. So that's one thing. So when they're not being stand-ins, they also double up as extras. And the answer to the extra thing is quite interesting. Again, a little bit like I related earlier on about understudies, they are usually very much included. In fact, my experience with Mr. Rudman was most, most unusual, if not unique, and totally unexpected in my case. They are extras and understudies, very much the same breed, are very much part of it. And the extras are organised by the assistant director, usually the second assistant. The first assistant director is the right hand of the director. He's the one who literally shouts, says, right, we're running out of time, whatever, whatever, whatever. The second assistant is the one who gives you your calls and also organises the extras. And they will always organise lovely, friendly people, you know, people they've used many, many times. So they're very familiar faces. They are very much a part of the production, and they are usually excellent, and they're usually very good at acting as well. So they are very much a part of the production. As I say, they are well known to the production. They're well known to the director. If anybody is difficult, they won't get used again. They're always muttering and grumbling, and they're not getting enough money, or they did this or something, or they want special extra money, danger money or stunt money. Or they're grumble guts. They grumble a lot, but they're lovely. They're gorgeous. And very often they are people who are professional in other spheres who love to do this as an extra. Certainly I can remember a lovely doctor's wife who used to come along regularly, and her daughter was my stand-in on many of the lovely Sarah on many of the jobs that I did. And her husband was a very super, actually he was the rugby doctor at Twickenham, lovely guy, Dr. Walkden. So, you know, there's no stigma whatsoever to any of this. They get to eat best, and they get, in the olden days, they used to get paid on the day. They would then, at the end of the day, they would take their little chitty to the assistant director, and they'd go home with cash, which is a lot more than I ever did. So it was a great wheeze. I don't know how it works nowadays, but I'm sure it's quite similar.
When you're on location, do you have a luxurious caravan full of showering and toilet facilities?
Well, Bill, you're talking about donkeys years ago in my case. That caravan that I shared with Nikki Henson on location was not romantic. There may have been some kind of a loo in the corner, gulp and gasp, but would not have been used by me, and particularly as I was wearing a very beautiful long frock. So the answer to that is no, not romantic. I believe nowadays they have fantastic facilities. In fact, the other day at Sion Park, I saw they were making, I'll give it away. I think, nobody said it, but I think they're making Bridgerton. Shh, I think so. Sort of implied, implicit. But anyway, some very high-powered thing going on there at the moment at Sion Park with I don't know how many caravans for the actors. So it's very nice now. They look after their actors in a way that they didn't used to. It was pretty rough and ready in them days. And as for going to the loo, well, I do remember my husband David Buck telling me that by accident he came across poor old Michael Horden actually in mid whatever behind some screen or something on a beach. So you usually dig yourself a hole and hope for the best. Yes, and I have actually helped lovely actress Jacqueline Clark. I remember when we were filming Eureka, programme for kids, I had to actually hold her huge dress while she went to the loo. So it's not romantic. You've got to drop all that. You've got to be naked in front of each other. It doesn't matter. And in the olden days, when I worked at the Open Space Theatre in London, the loo was a something san. What do they call it? L-san? An L-san in a corridor. One L-san exposed to everybody in a corridor, in a basement, underground, because the Open Space Theatre was half underground. And so, you know, you went there, boys and girls together. When you are a silly old actor, you lose all inhibitions. It's a little bit like being a patient in a hospital. You lose all inhibitions. You know, everybody who's had an operation knows you wear some ghastly nightgown that has no back to it. So all inhibitions lost. We're all the same in the end. Well, more or less.
And there's one last place I'd like to ask you about, a location that most people have heard of. So what are your memories of BBC Television Centre?
Well, I can tell you I don't like it now. I've been there. You don't go into the wonderful front entrance hall that used to be there. Magnificent place, the reception. You don't go up the stairs anymore. You turn left and go down to what was the scene dock. And you literally go in and go underground. And then I think they kind of use, I mean, I have been there a few times. You sort of then pop up somewhere and go into what was a studio. But in fact, it's all that which used to be the sort of restaurant block and all the sort of underground stuff where I remember going to have my supper and things. That's all sort of offices and dressing rooms now. Actually, I don't want to be rude about it, but I am being rude about it. It is a horrible mess. And the rest of it now is luxurious flats. That which used to be all those offices, as Bill says quite rightly, all those many floors. Like when I auditioned for the two Ronnies, I remember going up to the fifth floor and speaking across a table with dear Ronnie Barker and the sun shining on my face. Oh, it was wonderful up there. And that, of course, is where the weather studio used to be, presentation, as they used to call it. It was wonderful in those days. So you went in on recording days, you went up the stairs, commissionaire would park your car for you, and up you'd go, or you'd come in by transport, up the stairs, into the reception area. You would then wait for the allocation of your dressing room. And the dressing rooms, all of them, looked out on that central circular bit in the middle where there was a lawn in the olden days. And there were two wagtails used to live there. And from my dressing room, I used to watch those dear little wagtails. That was their home, was the lawn at White City. And everybody's dressing room was identical. So you were all looking out onto that lawn. It didn't matter whether you were in TC1 or 2 or 3 or 4 or right up to 8, I think it was. All the studios were gorgeous. They were all big. Some were bigger than others. I can't remember. I think TC1 was probably the biggest. I'm not sure. I've been in all of them, I think. I recorded a heck of a lot of shows there, some with live audiences and some not. They did Shakespeare's there. They did plays there. They did situation comedy there. The audience used to wait round the side. And, of course, they did Top of the Pops. And the audience of screaming 12-year-old girls all shrieking away, waiting for their darlings. Even the dreaded Jimmy Savile used to be there when I was there. So, yep, I'm very old, and I absolutely adored that place. And when it came to supper time, as I said just now, I used to go downstairs into the basement, very fusty old basement, and I always used to have the same supper. Pork chop, applesauce, sprouts, beans and taties. Lovely.
Was episode 5 of No Regrets with Madeline Smith.